This is the Alien UFO Podcast, episode 148, and I'm your host Simon Bowne. This week, I'm talking to Rhonda and Dwight Hull about their book, The Golden Awakening, an Arizona couple's extraordinary UFO and extraterrestrial encounters. Rhonda and Dwight are psychic mediums and authors. As well as The Golden Awakening, they also co-authored the books Speaking with the Spirits of the Old Southwest and Conversations with Spirits of the Old Southwest. Their ET experiences have had a profound effect on their lives. And you can enjoy the extended version of this episode ad-free, along with over 140 hours of extended episodes on Patreon. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe. Hey there, thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Glad to be here.
So we're going to talk about your book. It's called The Golden Awakening, an Arizona couple's extraordinary UFO and extraterrestrial encounters. Was this something that you both experienced from childhood, or is it something that came on later in life?
Well, this particular thing came on much later in life. Now, my wife and I have both been psychic mediums since very early in our childhood, but this particular phenomenon, or whatever you want to call it, came on a little later in life. In fact, just about 2 years ago
is that you're aware of.
That I'm aware of. Yeah, that it really made its presence known, I guess, so to speak. So yeah, it's a relatively recent phenomenon for us.
And making its presence known, that's an interesting way of saying it. So perhaps the presence might have been around, but it's only now it feels like it can make itself known to you.
I do. I think that it's very possible that one or both of us, since we are mediums and we are used to the paranormal, that it is probable that something we experienced when we were young may not have been spirits, but may have been interdimensional beings or extraterrestrials traveling through portals or whatever you want to call it.
You first started seeing lights in the sky. It's not like the first thing that happened is you woke up at night and there was a gray in your bedroom.
That's correct. For several years, in fact, one of the more famous cases I'm sure you've known about is the Phoenix Lights. And I was actually in my backyard barbecuing when I saw that firsthand. And then, over the years since then, both Rhonda and I have seen, lights in the sky, what we think or assume may have been possibly a craft that landed across the street from us at one point.
That cloaked itself to fit in with the environment. I also saw lights in the sky in the late 90s.
Not the first time we've seen stuff, but the first time we've actually, it's different to see things than it is to experience it. And when we, when I became an experiencer, that kind of changed everything for us.
So with the Phoenix Lights, I haven't seen many pictures or videos of what happened there. I have seen a video where I think the Air Force dropped some flares a couple of nights later.
Right. Yeah, trying to prove that it was possibly flares being dropped from planes, which it absolutely was not.
No, that craft was in the air in Phoenix for over 3 hours, and it was very widespread over different areas of the Phoenix area. And flares are not going to stay up for 3 hours. It's been debunked that it was not flares. Yeah. But of course, the government is trying to debunk that. So
what exactly did you see of the Phoenix Lights? Was it like really huge formation of lights, or was it quite small?
It was massive, absolutely massive. It was, I believe it was six white lights that were in, kind of a delta shape or a boomerang shape. But as it started coming directly overhead of me, I could actually see the craft itself, the underside of it. And it looked to me from my position that the whole bottom looked like, the best way I can describe it is like black mirrors. It was kind of shiny and wavy, but I could certainly make out a shape of like a boomerang shape, but it was absolutely huge. It blotted out the stars. It was a very clear night that night, and it blotted out the stars as it, you know, went over, and which really helped me define how big this thing was. Probably at least 2 or 3 football fields wide and maybe 1 or 2 long.
And I think you said in the book that you were looking it up at it and it looked like it was black mirrors, but at the same time, they didn't reflect the lights below.
Correct. Yeah, they didn't reflect the lights below. I could just see the shininess and kind of the waviness, like a black mirror almost. But yeah, it did not reflect the lights from, you know, down below, which I thought was later, as I started thinking about it, I thought was very interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, that's some kind of new thing, or, you know, their technology. So we're trying to think of it from the human perspective, but yeah, that doesn't always work.
And you also say that you didn't even think about going in and getting a camera. And this is something I've heard before from people who've seen UFOs. It's almost like if there could be some telepathic control from the ETs, so to just switch that off from people, so people don't even think of taking a picture.
Well, you know, and that could easily be. For me, I was so awestruck and so just transfixed on this object, trying to figure out what it was and basically being in awe of actually seeing it, that, you know, the other side of my brain saying, you know, get a camera and take a picture of it never even came into focus. I mean, I was just constantly just transfixed on it until it was over and passed. And it was only after I went inside, I was like, oh man, I should have come in and got a picture of that thing. But it just never at the time, in the moment, when you're in that moment, for some reason, that thought never occurs to you because you're so transfixed on the object.
And that happened too, Red Mountain, when we saw that orb that was changing colors. There were 3 of us there, and all of us had cell phones. None of us thought to get our cell phone out and take photo or video or anything, because we were so transfixed on trying to figure out what it was that we never even thought about getting our cell phone out.
And with that orb, do you feel that perhaps it knew you were there and it was almost like it was doing it on purpose? It was trying to get your attention?
Yeah, I think it probably knew we were there. Now, the other person in our group had a flashlight with him because it was dark when we were out in the desert there. And he took his flashlight and he flashed a sequence of, you know, flashes at this object. And as soon as he did that, like 2 or 3 seconds later, this object took off at just an unbelievably high rate of speed. So, you know, is it a coincidence that it took off? Did it see the flashlight and, you know, it took off? But I'm pretty convinced that, yeah.
It knew we were there. Yeah, it knew we were there.
Yeah, it's just something I wonder if, because I saw a UFO very close up and it was definitely some kind of craft. It was only 200 feet from me and just 25 feet off the ground.
And wow.
And it was quite a jump, you know. And I wondered if they did it on purpose. Like, for some people, it's like they're giving you a kick up the pants to say, hey, pay attention, there's something going on here. That's why I wondered if, with you guys seeing lights in the sky and things like that, if perhaps it's part of your path?
Very, very possibly. And I agree with you. I think when they come down that low and allow you to see them like that, I think it is kind of a trying to be like a wake-up call, like, hey, you know, pay attention to us, you know, we are here.
I think that then there are some people who seem to be magnets for these kind of experiences, and then there's other people who just never have these experiences.
I definitely think that's the case. And I don't know if, I know there's a lot of people that say they've never had that kind of an experience, but are those people open-minded? Are they looking at the sky? Are they noticing the environment around them? You know, I think there's something to be said for that group of people that not, don't do that. Maybe they have seen something, but they blocked it out. But I do think that certain groups of people could be studied by different groups of beings for different purposes. What do you think?
Yeah, I absolutely believe that there are some people who are more of a magnet because there's something either about them personally, about their DNA, about their abilities. It's long been talked about by ancient astronaut theorists and ufologists that these ETs are coming down and they're studying us and looking for, different traits or different things in our DNA. So people being more of a magnet may possess more of what they're looking for, where other people, may not. And I think Rhonda's right. I think there's some people who welcome it. I think there's some people who don't even want to, who don't believe it and don't want even, to think about that possibility. So even if they do see a light in the sky that, turns abruptly and goes off quickly, they'll just in their mind, they'll just rationalize and say, well, it was a satellite, it was a meteor, it wasn't, a UFO, and they just kind of go on with their day. People like us, we see something like that, we stand there and stare for another 10 minutes, hoping it comes back. So, it's two different mindsets, I think. And also, I think possibly what, we hold within ourselves, either abilities or something in our DNA that they want to study, the book's open. I don't know.
Maybe it's because you were psychic that they spotted you. It's almost, maybe that's some kind of a beacon. That's what they're looking for.
Well, and after my experience of actually seeing the beings next to my bed and then going through regression therapy, hypnosis therapy, I found out that they were taking me because of my psychic abilities, because I work specifically with animals. I can communicate with animals, both living and passed over, whereas my wife communicates with, the human element. So I think they were very interested in the fact that I can communicate with animals. And this may be something that goes back to my early childhood. I just cannot recall the memories, but it's possible that they've taken me before.
They did tell you in a memory, or you heard this, I don't know if it was in your hypnosis, that something about they've been taking you for a long time, or there's been many visits.
There's been many visits and there will be many more. Yeah, is what my therapy session came out with. But that may be, for me anyway, that might be, kind of the ability they're looking at or they're interested in.
And the hypothesis that I propose is that maybe we know, or we believe that they can communicate telepathically. That's what most experiencers experience, is talking to them with your mind. But is it possible that they cannot do that with animals or creatures that are animal-like from other places? So they need humans that can do that, or are they teaching them how to do that? Who knows? But I think there's something there that makes animal communication different. And I've been telling him since it started happening, I think these guys are because you can talk to animals.
Can we talk about this, the really weird thing that happened where you saw, it looked like a mobile home that just appeared?
Yeah, that was strange.
Yeah. And, we were, at this point in our lives, and I guess I have to kind of make this point, UFOs and aliens and anything like that, they weren't even on our radar, really. I mean,
We believed. We'd had sightings.
Yeah, but it wasn't really on our radar. We were both psychic mediums. We were both paranormal investigators. But yeah, when we saw that, we had just stepped out of our house to have the last cigarette of the night.
And this whole area, the whole neighborhood is mobile homes. So I want to
preface that. Yeah, pretty much. And, you know, we look across the street, which normally is a vacant field with just
a fenced in area,
you know, kind of a round fenced in area across the street. But when we looked over this time, and it was dark, we saw what very much looked like a single wide mobile home within that fenced area. And we sat there and we were like, well, that's weird. How did they even get it in there, and how did they get it in so quick? And
how'd they get the power on? Because there was light coming from within this whatever it was. So we sat there trying to assess it for probably 30 minutes, walked to the edge of our fencing to get a closer look. But we could not figure it out.
And we, you know, from our vantage point, it looked just like a single wide mobile home with a, you know, with a door and maybe a couple windows on either side.
No glass and no physical door, but the doorways.
Right. We couldn't see in, but we could see light. And we were like, wow, that's strange. We'll have to check this out in the morning when we come out. So we just basically just kind of blew it off, went inside, went to bed, got up the next morning to come out and have the first morning cigarette. And there was nothing there. And I was like, oh, wait a minute. And I actually walked across the street to the lot. And I'm former military, so I, you know, the first thing I do is I look for tracks or any signs anybody's been there. And everything there was completely undisturbed. There were no marks. There were no tire tracks. There were no footprints. There was nothing. It was just completely bare. And that's when it really struck me, like, what the heck did we just see last night? And then it, you know, started sparking, you know, ideas as to what it could have been.
But it took us a few years to report it.
Yeah, we did report it to Phoenix MUFON. Yeah.
I heard a story of a woman who's had experiences all her life, but she remembered when she was a small girl, she would go and play with this other small girl in a house at the end of the street. And when she was an adult, she said to her mum, who was that family at the end of the street where I used to go and play with their little girl? And the mum said, there's no house at the end of the street. That was wasteland. There's never been a house there.
Yeah.
You know, when we reported it to MUFON and they did an investigation and contacted the owner of the land and went back on Google Maps a few years, even several years prior, to see if there had ever been a structure in that fenced in area, and they did not find one. She did, the woman I spoke to, did tell me that there have been other reports very similar to what you just described, with rectangular shaped, both UFOs, you know, in the air, and stories of people visiting houses that never existed, talking to people. So interesting.
Yeah, that's that thing of screen memories, isn't there, where it seems like they can telepathically change what you're seeing. So it's not actually that the craft you saw, if it was a craft, was exactly like a mobile home, but maybe it was the way they affected you.
Oh, could have been.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, very much so.
So, and there was another time, wasn't there, you were, was it doing the dishes and you looked out and saw something on a fence?
Yeah, I was, you know, doing the dishes one evening, and it was not quite dark yet. You know, the sun had set, but it wasn't quite dark. And I was doing the dishes, looking out the window, which is right there at the sink. And along our fence line, which is only about maybe 20 meters away, I see this very small, maybe, you know, 2 foot tall bipedal being, is all I can say. It was just a dark object, but I could see it had two arms and two legs, just running across our fence line, just running down the fence line.
On the other side of the fence.
On the other side of the fence, yeah. But you know, I saw it running, and I was like, what the heck is that? So, you know, I drop the dish, I go in and, you know, get a firearm, I come running through the living room saying, telling her, yeah, I just saw something run through our yard. And I, you know, I go out there and I didn't see anything at all. Looked up and down the fence line, went into the other neighbor's yard and kind of looked around to see if it may have gone in there. And it was not in there. But I know because I watched it for, you know, probably 2 or 3 seconds, which is really a kind of a long time to have that kind of a sighting. And it was definitely about 2 foot tall, definitely had 2 arms, 2 legs and a head, very dark colored. And boy, it moved fast. And again, being someone who knows to look for tracks and how to track people, there was absolutely nothing, no footprints, no any kind of prints whatsoever. So that one really shocked me and really kind of put me back on my heels, so to speak.
So have you ever had that phenomenon of missing time in your lives?
Well, yes, we have. Yeah, we have, actually. It's
driving to different locations. We have had that happen, actually on the way to paranormal events in other towns.
Well, it should have taken, you know, maybe an hour, hour and 20 minutes. We were there in 50 minutes. You know, or
way an impossible time frame.
Yeah, we were there. Impossible time frame. We didn't have any recollection of, you know, anything being different. It's just, it only took us, you know,
45 minutes instead of an hour and a half.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a big difference.
We've had that happen a couple times.
Yeah, it's interesting because most of the time you hear about that, people say it should have taken me an hour to get somewhere, but they took 3 hours.
Right. It's usually, usually the other way around, but.
For us, you know, of course we always have to be different, I guess, but, for us, it took a much shorter amount of time. So I'm not exactly sure what that means, but, it's happened more than once. So, you know, it's something we note when it happens.
There was your psychic mediums and you do paranormal investigations, but do you ever see any kind of crossover between ETs and the afterlife and that side of your investigations?
Well, we've experienced that once, at least here. When you were getting out of the shower, I was in the kitchen and he walks out into the kitchen and asked me if I was just yelling expletives outside of the bedroom in the hallway. And I'm like, no. I didn't hear anything. So he takes me and shows me where he heard it. And it was the moment where he heard a woman say, "What the F?" And I'm like, no. And I didn't even hear that. And we walk back up the hallway. And at the other end of the hallway, we have a cabinet that has a snow globe on it. And we never move the snow globe. And this is Arizona, so things tend to get a little bit dusty. But he noticed that the snow globe base of it was now tilted and leaking as if something had jolted it. So my theory is that there was a crossover, that perhaps the former owner, who does visit and make herself known from time to time, she's passed over, perhaps she saw one of these beings in their dimension or that dimension. And it freaked her out.
And that's the expletive.
Yeah.
I think now that we've become more aware of the extraterrestrials and with our experiences, I can't help but look back at some of the other experiences and cases that we've had in the past. And I can't help but wonder, was it spirits, or, you know, was it possibly, you know, ETs or what they call interdimensionals or something like that? The more we look into it, the more that line is now blurred for us.
And do you have dreams where you see something and you think perhaps this is some kind of a memory that's seeping through somehow?
I have had that. I can't say I'm the dreamer. The dreams that I do have usually turn out to be either prophetic or I believe memories. I don't generally remember my dreams, but I have had a few dreams that have come true. And this was during that time period, during that 6-month time period. And then Maybe the year following, I also had a few follow-up dreams about our UFO event, that, you know, someone would show up and I couldn't see his face and we would let him in without a ticket. And someone did show up. We let him in without a ticket. I mean, it was exactly as I saw in my dream. But I had a dream during this time that I saw a nebula near the Andromeda galaxy. I was being shown this and told that's where we come from. I don't know who was telling me that, but apparently that it was still within the Milky Way galaxy, but very close to the Andromeda galaxy. And then later discovered somebody discovered a new find at this nebula near the Andromeda galaxy, still within the Milky Way galaxy. And then at one time I had a dream that, at one point during the 6 months, I sleptwalk, and I am not a sleepwalker. And I know this because Dwight felt me and saw me get back into bed, asked me about it the next morning, and I had no memory of it. But later on, I dreamt that I walked out into our living room and met a tall gray who I kind of begged him to take us with him, but he talked to me like an elder would. And no, I, you can't go with this child. You two have much more work to do here, but he felt like family. And, it was very, very emotional, still emotional, but it was very emotional. I don't know why.
It's amazing how this stuff comes up.
Yeah, it really is. You know, I've had several, I guess you'd say memories, after I had my hypnosis session. The person doing the session said that afterwards, in the weeks or, you know, coming weeks or months afterwards, I may have memories come through as a result of my regression therapy. And I have, in fact, just a few days after my regression therapy, I had, you know, very, very vivid memories come through. I don't know if I've had dreams. But certainly I think I've had memories come through.
Wasn't there a time you were on a mountain with a friend and they said they knew where there were some glyphs, but they wanted to go ahead, and there was something really weird happened there, wasn't there?
Yeah, that was, you know, and we still are kind of scratching our heads as to what happened, but, you know, the very basic story is my wife and I and a friend of ours went out in the middle of the desert, as we very often do, just to explore and look around. This particular area was just north of Tucson, Arizona. It was an old, many, many years ago, many centuries ago, it was Indian land. And we went there just to explore and look around. Well, our friend said that he had been there before, and on top of this one very tall hill, he said he thought that there were some, you know, petroglyphs that he saw. He said, let me go up there and make sure this is the right hill before we all, you know, walk up there.
Because there's a lot of hills out there. Yeah.
So we said, fine, we'll stay at the bottom of the hill. We'll let you go up and, you know, you come back down, let us know if you found them or not. If not, we'll just keep moving on. And he went up there and, you know, we waited. And finally, we both were like, he's been gone too long. I think we need to go find him. Maybe he fell, maybe he got hurt. So we walk up to the top of the hill and, there's not much at the top of the hill except the top of the hill. It's not that big. And we didn't see him anywhere. We looked all around, you know, the whole valley, you know, from where we were at. And, you know, out here, the desert is very flat for the most part, except for a few hills that you can see many miles from these hills.
And we can see the vehicles.
Yeah, we can see everything. But we didn't see him. And we were like, oh, boy. You know, did he fall? Did he get, you know, stuck in a rock, you know, between a rock or something, wedged? So we started walking down the other side of this hill, trying to look into the rock crevices, see if he maybe was there. He wasn't there. And long story short, we looked all around this hill, never saw him. We made it back to the road that led to where we parked our vehicles. We had a vehicle and our friend had a vehicle. And, you know, my wife was, you know, getting very hot and she wanted to get her cell phone charged in case we had to call for, you know, help or anything. She said, let me walk back to the cars. I'll plug in the phone, maybe get a water or two, and then I'll come back after I get my phone charged. I said, that's fine. I'll stay here in case, you know, he comes back or I see him or whatever. So she walked down the road. Now, from where we were standing to where the cars were, it was maybe only, you know, half a mile, you know, maybe. So, you know, maybe a kilometer and a half. So I was standing there in the middle of this road, a dirt road, and she's gone out of my sight.
And the dirt road, let's preface that. The dirt road is maybe 10 feet wide.
Yeah, it's not that wide. And then there's desert, of course, on both sides. So she goes out of my sight. Now I'm kind of just looking around, you know, waiting. And I look to my right, and there's our friend just right there by the road walking right at me. And I said, where did you come from? He said, where did you come from? I said, I've been standing here. He said, yeah, I was been standing here too, looking for you guys. I said, oh, come on. I said, Rhonda just walked back to the car. I said, to get a couple of waters and a charger phone. He said, well, I was just at my truck and I just walked up the road. I would have seen her. I said, well, she just walked down the road. And he said, well, I don't know what to tell you. He said, I walked up, I beeped the horn at the truck trying to get you guys' attention. I said, well, we never heard anything. He said, and then I decided to come back to where we started, you know, to go up the hill to see if you guys were still here and you weren't here. And it was just a whole, like, what happened to you? Well, what happened to you? We never saw each other. And they never, Rhonda and my friend, never saw each other passing each other on the road walking. And the road's maybe 8 to 10 feet wide. Yeah, it's not a long road.
And there's nowhere to hide. No, so
it's this flat desert on either side.
We have no idea. It was literally like one of us went into some kind of a shift, a time.
Portal or something. And, you know, I wasn't really sure what was happening or what was going on. Until, because I told my friend, I said, okay, let's just walk back to the cars and the truck and, you know, get some water and find out what happened here. And we walked back and Rhonda had just gotten in the car. She looked up and I could see the look of shock on her face. And she's like, where'd you guys come from? We were just like, we just walked down the road. She said, well, I just got here. I said, it's been 15 minutes. She said, well, I literally just got here and got in the car. I haven't even had time to plug in my phone yet. And she said, where'd you find our friend? I said, he came walking up to me. So it was just a very odd, I don't know, we went into the portal, he went into the portal, but there was definitely some kind of a shift.
Being a native site, and this was a native village with terrace gardens. It was a huge site about 700 to 1,000 years ago. So I don't know if they built something, if something was there, maybe that's why they were there. I don't know. Very crazy experience.
It was a very crazy experience. And to this day, I still scratch my head over.
And did you feel like really scared? Or was it just a kind of feeling confused? Like, I just don't understand.
It was.
It was both. But I was both. We were panicked for him.
Well, we were scared for him because we didn't know what happened. We thought maybe he was hurt. That he, because he's older. He's an older gentleman. So we thought, did he have a heart attack? Is he laying somewhere? So I guess there was some fear with that, but not over the situation as far as.
That was mass confusion. That was
a lot of confusion and trying to figure out what the heck happened and why.
So you guys, in the book, you say that your smartwatch, Dwight's smartwatch, played a role in raising your awareness of weird things that were happening. So what did the smartwatch do?
Well, I had just gotten the smartwatch of January of that particular year, 2022. Mm-hmm. And it was the first smartwatch I've ever had. I always wanted one. So I've always been kind of a tech gadgety guy. So I got one and I thought it was really neat. And it was probably, you know, 2 or 3 weeks after having it, because I got it primarily to see what my sleep was, to see if I was sleeping at night, that kind of thing. And after about 3 weeks, I noticed that the sleep, I was getting very little sleep, maybe 3 hours a night, but it showed I had just like well over 100 steps.
Multiple times you had more steps than you would take had you had to get up in the middle of the night and use the restroom. Like way more steps.
Hundreds of steps. And it was, these steps are only, you know, record after midnight because it's midnight to midnight is when this watch obviously records its data. So I started, you know, looking at that when I'd look at my sleep in the morning, I look at steps and it's like 300 steps.
Well, and a lot of times though, it was lower.
It was only a few times, but still more than to the bathroom and back, way more.
And at that point, I wasn't thinking anything really strange. I was thinking, you know, is it a watch thing? Is it, you know, I was trying to, you know, be, I guess, lack of a better term, scientific about it. So I studied about how a watch, you know, tracks steps and everything else. And, you know, I'm not going to go into that whole long paradigm. But
there's parameters that your arms and your legs have to be in motion.
Motion and, you know, work on the three axis in order to, log a step. And so that kind of.
And you did try to recreate it, laying in bed, sitting in the chair.
And it didn't record any steps. So, you know, it was weird, but, you know, again, you know, anything, you know, paranormal, so to speak, was not even in my mind. I was just trying to figure out how, but it did bring awareness to something weird's happening. And so we started being a little more deductive on what would happen throughout the night. So, you know, if she had something happen or if I had something odd happen or whatever throughout the night, we'd tell each other and then we'd log it.
We started keeping a journal.
And, you know, it was probably a month or more that we started kind of making a connection that, okay, something is going on.
I think it was the next month. I'd have to, you know, honestly, that whole 6 month period is kind of a blur. It's a good thing that I kept a journal because dating stuff is kind of blurry, but I think it was in February that you really noticed, or maybe it was March.
It was March. I started making a connection that something definitely weird was happening. And then, of course, we started, you know.
You woke up with the scratches. I mean, weird stuff was going on.
I made a note of some of the journal entries I wanted to ask you about. But before that, if the watch said that you had 3 hours sleep or 4 hours sleep, does it feel like that night you were having trouble sleeping? Or as far as you're concerned, you got a good 8 hours?
Yeah, that's as far as I'm concerned. You know, I had no memory of anything. I just figured I had a good 8 hours.
Yeah, you didn't wake up groggy like you didn't sleep well.
And I didn't keep waking up multiple times throughout the night or anything like that. And that's what kind of got me thinking about, well, how come it only says 3 hours and 68 steps? Yeah, I slept all night. I feel like I slept all night.
And I didn't get up to go to the bathroom. So why do I have 68 steps?
Yeah. So, yeah, that's when it started really kind of, clicking a little bit for us.
And you have security cameras inside and outside your house. Have you ever caught anything on them?
Not a thing.
On the top.
Well, we did once, and it was, and I want to say, use this term a little loosely, but it was kind of an accidental capture. Our outside cameras, we don't have on recording 24/7, just pretty much when either we're gone or we're asleep at night. But our particular cameras, they will take one photograph an hour within that, for 24 hours, and then it will put them all together so you can look at each photograph,
in a video form
every 24 hours. And it's just one photograph, like every hour and a half. And in one photo of one of our outside cameras, we did see a shadow of the roof of our house, on our backyard. You can see, straight, and you can see our satellite dish shadow. And then you could see several,
like five
figures, human figures.
Humanoid figures.
Like they were standing on our roof. They're very clear. Like, you know, a shadow of, you know, our roof, the satellite dish, and then like four or five humanoid figures. And it, like I say, it wasn't a video. It was only one picture in this series. So, of course, you know, I stopped and took screenshots of it. But that is the only time out of, you know, countless hours, both inside and out, that we've had these cameras on. And we've had these cameras for several years.
Yeah. And we left them on quite a bit during this time because we were hoping we could catch something. But we never did, which, I mean, I guess in the big scheme of things isn't surprising. Mm-hmm. But we still, I mean, 2 years later, we'll look at the clips that we get that are photos put into a video that the camera does automatically. We'll still take note of the two cameras inside that do that to make sure nothing, you know, if something's there or not, we view them.
And when you saw those figures that were on the roof, did that kind of freak you out? Because it sounds really creepy.
It did. As a matter of fact, you know, when I went through that particular video and saw it and took the screenshot, and I didn't tell her for probably 3 days. And we were talking about the cameras, I guess. It was something we were talking about 3 days later. And I said, well, I've got a picture to show you that we got from one of the cameras. I said, I wasn't sure if I was going to show you or not, but here it is. And I showed her and it freaked her out too. So yeah, it was a moment, that's for sure.
But we did create a medicine wheel.
Wow.
We did, you know, we have a medicine wheel that we created. What we thought was a native spirit. So we created a medicine wheel at that end of the house. And then we lit it all with solar lights and we kind of became obsessed with solar lights. So our whole yard is, it looks like a space garden. But medicine wheels are actually sacred circles. So very much like crop circles. So I don't know if it, in part we sort of drew them here, if we created something, or if, you know, they were here all along because of Dwight.
Do you feel in a way, you might think, wow, Dwight, it's all your fault?
No, actually, I think it's, he's very fortunate to have experiences like this. Very, I mean, I don't want to say lucky, but very fortunate and special, you know, very special.
Yeah, on that same note, I have to say too that, you know, I feel very fortunate that, you know, I'm married to someone who's accepting of what we're going through and what I've gone through, because it's hard enough to have to deal with some of these things with your spouse. But it would be a whole lot harder if your spouse didn't believe you or
was a non-believer, period.
So, you know, I'm very thankful that, you know, she's, you know, very supportive of everything.
And I don't mind that he has special friends that he goes off into in the night and does things.
It's not like I'm going to the pub drinking with him, but, you know, it's, yeah. And I only really truly remember one time. So, but, yeah, who knows how many more there were or how many more there may be. I don't know.
So I wanted to talk about a couple of these journal entries. And there's one I made a note of, May 4th, 2022, 1:46 a.m., woke up after being dropped a few inches from the mattress. And there were three non-terrestrial beings. So what do you remember happening that night?
Boy, I remember that like it was last night. I woke up, you know, with the feeling that I was dropped onto the bed from just a few inches above the bed. And when I woke up, and I know I was awake, being former law enforcement and military, when something like that happens, the first thing you do is try to get a timestamp, try to get a time reference. And my clock was right there. So I saw that it was 1:46 a.m. And this is all happening in like a split second. I woke up, I saw the clock, and then I looked a little bit, you know, to my left, and I saw these three beings. Their features were like the grays, but they were not gray colored. They were actually golden color and actually glowing, like the light was emanating from them. And they were only about, you know, 3 foot tall, standing right next to my bed, which, you know, again, all these things are happening in milliseconds. Your mind's trying to make sense of all this stuff. And the wall and our window that we had a fan in were gone. It was just a black hole there, and they were standing in front of it, right in front, you know, right by the bed, looking at me. And I remember thinking, what is this? What's going on? And these three beings, and again, I know I was awake. This isn't a lucid dream. This isn't anything like that. And when I'm trying to get some kind of conceptual what's going on kind of thing here, they just kind of slowly, you know, and I can't say walked backwards into this. They just kind of slowly moved into this black hole where the wall used to be. And as they went into it, this hole closed up. And after the hole completely closed up, then I could see the wall, the window, their fan that was running. I could hear the fan again. And I was like, what just happened? I know what I saw. And I looked at the clock again, excuse me. And it was like, you know, 1:47, 1:48. So I'm aware that time went by.
And then you were out.
And then I fell back asleep again. It was not, you know, I couldn't help it. I just fell back asleep. And when I got up the next morning, of course, the first thing I did was, you know, tell my wife what happened. And, you know, of course, she made that journal entry. And that is what, you know, and I can't even overstate it enough. That was the moment that completely changed my life and, you know, by proxy, of course, Rhonda's too.
So can we talk about your experience with hypnotherapy? Because I'm a hypnotherapist and I specialize in taking people through past life regression.
Uh-huh.
And I've had a couple of clients who've wanted to be regressed to their experience with ETs. But how was your experience? How did it all work for you?
It worked very well. It was,
you know,
my very first experience. I've never been.
He was afraid, actually, that he wouldn't be able to be hypnotized.
Yeah.
That was his main fear going into it because he's former military and he had a lot of training. But it worked brilliantly.
It worked brilliantly. And, you know, again, it was my first time. And to be honest with you, you know, up until that point, it had been like a year and a half since I was taken, is when we had this regression.
Actually, it was about 2 years.
About 2 years. And to be honest with you, I was still, even though I knew it was real, I saw it with my own two eyes, I knew I was awake. There's that one part of your brain that says, what if you didn't? What if this isn't? So, you know, having the regression therapy, I was hoping, which it did, answer that question for me. So it went very, very well. It went very smoothly. The woman who did it was, she'd been doing it for 25, 30 years professionally. In fact, she was pretty much retired, but she decided to do mine because the case kind of really interested her. And throughout this hypnotherapy session, apparently I kept going much deeper than what she wanted me to. She had to keep trying to bring me up. And I know you would understand the terms more than I ever did. In different levels of consciousness and alpha and beta and all that, which I don't understand any of that. All I know is she told me that I kept going much deeper and she had to keep bringing me back up so I could communicate with both her and still remember what's happening to me. And we got a lot of information that, quite frankly, surprised me after everything was said and done. And after we were done, you know, being, again, former law enforcement and everything else, I asked her, I said, in your professional opinion, is there any way that that experience that I had could have been, you know, a dream, a lucid dream? She said, absolutely not. She said, I took you down. I made sure that you were having actual memories from the subconscious. She said, my only regret is we only had this amount of time. She said, because I know by what you described and how you had your experience that there is much more to this story than what we touched on, you know, this evening. She definitely recommend more sessions to try to get more of the story, she said, because there is a much bigger story here. And so, yeah, we have not had any more, we have not had any more regression therapy as of yet. I'm very open to it. It's just over here in the States, it's very difficult to
find somebody. Yeah. Who does that particular, you know? Yeah.
So it's very difficult. And, you know, I just, I hope we do find someone, because I think there is more to the story now. And I certainly want to find out.
You had memories of being taken on board a craft. Is that right?
I had memories of being taken into a room. I cannot say it was a craft. I don't know. I never saw a craft. I was in a very dimly lit room. Off to my left was the only thing I can describe it is like a huge panel of, you know, different lights. And before me, you know,
in front of you,
in front of me was a very odd looking table, a steel looking table with some type of life form on it that was strapped down. My three golden beings were next to me. And through a lot of communication, I'm assuming, you know, psychically, telepathically communicating, they wanted me to communicate with whatever this was on the
table. They wanted you to find out what was going on.
What was wrong with it. And I told them that, you know, it's in pain. And I kept repeating that.
It was crying out. It was making a god-awful sound like a humpback whale.
Right. Like a humpback whale's cry.
Yeah.
And I told them, apparently, telepathically, that it's in pain. It's in pain. And they said, can you help it? I said, no, I can't. I can't. I kept repeating that. And one of the beings went over to it. And as soon as he went over to it, and I don't have memory of if he touched it or not. I don't have memory of that. But the noise from this bead creature stopped. And I sat there and looked at it and tried to communicate with it. And I knew it was no longer in pain, that it was, lack of a better term, I guess, comfortable. And that's what the three gold, you know, beings wanted that particular time. They wanted me to let them know what this thing was feeling. It was just, you know, I'm still trying to wrap my head around it. And it's been, you know, a long time since, you know, that happened.
Turns out you're the animal communicator of the galaxy, babe.
In your work as psychic mediums, can people contact you and book a sitting with you?
They can. I'm mostly retired. I generally only take current clients or people who follow my Facebook page, which is Rhonda Hole Psychic Medium. But they can book it through there or through my email, which is on my Facebook page.
Okay, that's great. So the book we've been talking about is The Golden Awakening, An Arizona Couple's Extraordinary UFO and Extraterrestrial Encounters. And people can get that on Amazon, can't they?
Yes, yes.
Well, it's great talking to you. Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah, thank you so much. It was great.
And that was an interview with Rhonda and Dwight Hull about their book, The Golden Awakening, an Arizona couple's extraordinary UFO and extraterrestrial encounters. And a great way to support the podcast is to sign up to Patreon, where you can get exclusive access to the extended version of this episode. Just go to patreon.com/alienufopodcast. When you sign up, you get access to the episodes in the back catalogue, and they are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. And if you want to try out the extended episodes, you can now get a 7-day free trial. There are two tiers. In the $3 a month tier, you get an extended episode every month. And in the $6 a month tier, you get an extended episode every week. My website is pastliveshypnosis.co.uk, and the link is in the show notes. And if you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.